Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am full of a chicken cutlet.
It's a great way to be.
Not mad, and I will not apologize.
And you shouldn't. Never apologize for being full of chicken cutlet.
And some of the finest of Italian cuisine, if this even counts as it. I think, is this an American invention?
I don't know. It's brought to you by my Italian grandmother, so, you know, it's going to be good, regardless of where it's from.
True. But I'm excited for today's story.
Me too. We're going to be talking about Madonna's stalkers today.
And plural.
One, yes, many stalkers, and one very specifically is the main issue here. So we're going to be talking about him a lot. But before we get into that, I wanted to let you know that bonus episode number 53 should be out now over on Patreon. So if you want to hear that story and 52 others and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast.
And as always, there is no ads over there.
So true. But today we're getting into Madonna's stalkers. So you want to jump into that?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Who's Madonna? No, I'm kidding.
Who's Madonna?
I'm kidding.
Only the Queen of Pop.
The Queen of Pop.
Yeah.
Was that her nickname for all? I did not know that.
Yeah, she's definitely been referred to as the Queen of Pop. Also, the Material Girl. She's got many names.
Oh, that's who that's from.
The Material? You didn't know that?
I don't know.
Because
we don't
are
listen to her.
Living in a material world.
Well, I've heard that song.
That's Madonna.
I didn't know it was her.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Okay.
Sorry, Madonna. I apologize.
Well, for anyone who's been living under a rock, like lovely Alex over here.
It's nice under the rock,
Madonna
guys.
Is a pop star and has been for a long time. She's been referred to as the Queen of Pop. So let's get into talking about her because I'm going to give you a little bit of background on who Madonna is. Madonna, who was born Madonna Louise Ciccone, is an American singer, songwriter, and cultural icon widely recognized as the Queen of Pop. Holding the Guinness World Record as the best-selling female recording artist in history, she revolutionized the music industry with her continual reinvention, boundary-pushing visuals, and immersive creative control.
Take that, Taylor Swift.
Oh, we're not taking a stance on Taylor Swift.
No,
those
I'm
Swifties
joking.
Are
I'm joking.
Crazy.
I'm joking. I didn't know her real name was Madonna, though.
Yeah, Madonna Louise Ciccone.
Usually people have like a stage name, you know?
It does sound like one, but it's not.
Was good enough.
Madonna was known all over the world for her incredible performances that pushed boundaries. She was very progressive and forward-thinking. Not only did she push the envelope with her sexuality, but she was also a major trendsetter. Girls wanted to be her, men wanted to be with her, and she was an icon in the gay community.
Even the gays wanted to be with her. Let's
well,
be honest.
I'm sure some of them did. Unlike other fandoms, her fan base does not have an official moniker, although the term Madonna Wannabe became a popular media label to talk about her early audience, which was mostly composed of female teenagers. However, the fanaticism known as Madonna Mania emerged by 1985. Around this time, she achieved widespread commercial success, setting international records and impacting the fashion industry. With unusually large numbers of women, particularly teenage girls, began dressing in the style that Madonna displayed in public at the time. She was constantly on tour and always in the press. Her music, her fashion, and her personality had broken new boundaries in pop culture. But when you have that level of fame, you have a lot of fans. And inside that fan base or outside of it, there are unstable people that are obsessed with you. Her fandom set the world record of the biggest fan letter ever written.
Missed opportunity by the media. Madonna B.
Madonna B. That's
Come
a good
on,
one.
Dude. That's right there.
Yeah, and also Madonna Mania is similar to Beatlemania, it seems. which is just like a large influx of fans that are absolutely obsessed with you. So she had that too.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you get, when you become the biggest artist of all time.
Yes, that will happen.
That's what that is.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Madonna had many obsessed fans and stalkers, many of whom she had personal encounters with. American cult leader David Koresh was one of her fans.
Are you for the Waco guy?
Yeah, the Waco guy was a Madonna fan. Apparently in a significant enough way that like he was notable in her list of fans. Oh yeah.
Wait, so he's like, is he like blasting Madonna as he's like ranting at his congregation?
He might have been. I mean, he was like a wannabe rock star.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember details about that story, but I can't.
He was just like a crazy cult leader, wannabe rock star, and he was in charge of the Waco siege. Or he was, you know, not in charge of the siege, but...
He certainly made it happen, put it that way. Yeah. I just didn't know he was, I didn't know he was musical.
Sure. Anyway, he's just one of her notable fans. That's really all there is to this little tidbit. I found that interesting. There have also been countless artists who have been inspired by her work, but we're not talking about them today. We're talking about a few crazed fans whose obsession turned violent. Keith Jason, in the early 1990s, was sentenced to 5 years in prison after he was caught breaking into Madonna's Hollywood home multiple times. He had openly expressed an intention to, quote-unquote, possess her. And Todd Lawrence, in 1994, scaled the 8-foot security fence at Madonna's Hollywood estate, claiming to be her husband, and had to be arrested at gunpoint by her security team. The incident led to a 3-year restraining order issued by a Los Angeles judge. Which is very similar to the man we're going to be focusing on today, but he didn't go down as easily. Robert Dewey Hoskins also believed Madonna was in love with him and was going to stop at nothing to get to her. 2 decades before his break-in, Robert Dewey Hoskins was a troubled young boy growing up in a violent home. He had a terrible childhood. His father would beat him and his siblings with a whip. He was bullied in school, beaten by his father. He was in the hospital for over a year from a traumatic car accident that gave him serious head trauma. He had constant anger management issues, and by the age of 14, after he had a finger severed, he became addicted to morphine. Robert came from a very unpredictable, violent household that created an intense fear and anxiety in him, and definitely affected the person he later became.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Halfway across the country, Madonna was growing up in a much different environment. Madonna Louise Ciccone was born in Bay City, Michigan, on August 16, 1958, into a huge Catholic family.
Michigan's own. I did not know she was from Michigan.
Yeah. She also went to U of M briefly.
For real?
Yes.
Leaders and best, baby. I mean... I'm surprised, but yet I'm not surprised. You know right. what I'm saying?
Yeah, it makes sense that the Madonna would be at U of M.
Isn't that crazy?
It is pretty crazy.
That's super cool.
She was the middle child of 6 kids. Her father, Silvio Tony Ciccone, worked as an optical and military engineer, as well as a physicist for Chrysler Defense and later General Dynamics Land Systems.
I mean, no big deal.
Yeah. Her mother, Madonna Louise, was an X-ray technician. However, her mother sadly died when Madonna was only 5 years old.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Her father, Tony, later remarried the family's housekeeper, Joan Gustafson, which Madonna didn't love. And that put her on the road to becoming a rebellious kid. She was a very smart kid. She earned high grades. Her father gave her a quarter for every A she earned. However, she was also kind of a wild child. She was a cheerleader in high school and was notorious for her unconventional behavior. Madonna performed...
unconventional behavior is like a great thing that was probably put on a report card.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. So she performed cartwheels and handstands in the hallways between classes. She hung upside down from the monkey bars during recess and lifted her skirt in class to amuse the boys. So she was a bit rebellious, you could say.
She was having a good time.
She was. In retrospect, Madonna described herself as a quote-unquote lonely girl who was searching for something, explaining, quote, I wasn't rebellious in a certain way. I cared about being good at something. I didn't shave under my arms, and I didn't wear makeup like normal girls do. But I studied, and I got good grades. I wanted to be somebody. She didn't have a mother figure, so she needed to figure out how to be a woman on her own. Her father initially enrolled her in classical piano lessons, but she eventually persuaded him to let her study ballet instead. And her ballet teacher, Christopher Flynn, inspired her to pursue a career in dance, remarking that she was the best student in the class. Imagine that.
That doesn't hurt. Also, yeah.
It's Madonna.
Yep.
She decided she was going to go to New York and make something of herself. She was going to be a star. After graduating in January of 1976, she received a dance scholarship to University of Michigan and spent the summer studying dance in North Carolina. However, she eventually left college and moved to New York City to pursue her dreams. When Madonna moved to New York City, she had nothing but $35 in her pocket. She had no friends, no community, and no family supporting her financially. She began surviving on popcorn on the nights that she couldn't scrape together enough money to get a hot meal. And during this hustle, she integrated herself into the party scene of New York, which eventually led her to her first opportunity, singing and playing drums in a rock band called The Breakfast Club. That evolved into her having a boyfriend named Jellybean Benitez.
Wait, Dad, it's my new boyfriend, Jellybean Benitez. Who's this guy? The best part is that her dad's name is Tony Ciccone.
Tony Ciccone, yeah. He was a very important DJ and music producer, Jellybean. Yep.
Very important.
You know, the Jellybean.
He wanted to be taken seriously, too.
No, of course. After she moved in with Jellybean, her serious music career began.
Really can't get past that.
I just thought it
so
funny.
She moved in with Jellybean.
Yeah, her serious music career began after she moved in with Jellybean. Of course. She ended up on the radar of a man named Seymour Stein, the founder of Sire Records. And as soon as he came across Madonna, he knew she had star power. He was so determined to sign her that while he was in the hospital, Madonna came to see him while he was in his hospital bed to hammer out a deal, signing her to Sire Records.
You gotta hand it to him, the man is dedicated.
And he knew that she was gonna be the Madonna, you know? Like, he could see it. And so that was the beginning of Madonna's career.
She got signed.
She released her debut album, sold 10 million copies, and that changed her life forever. She blew up right away because no one had ever seen anyone like her. Madonna's allure was rooted in her fierce agency, unapologetic sexuality, and role as a cultural provocateur. She merged dance pop with underground club culture and redefined female power, turning the conversation around gender, religion, and societal norms into high art. She did an interview on American Bandstand, and they asked her what her ambition was, and she said she wanted to rule the world. As Madonna's career flourished, Robert Dewey Hoskins had become an adult with increasingly disturbing psychological issues. He was extremely aggressive and had assaulted family members on numerous occasions. He got married and had 5 children, but he would beat his children and his wife to the point where they fled the state to get away from him. He had charges ranging from battery on a police officer, domestic violence, and even attempted murder. And as time went on, he became increasingly delusional. According to family members, they started noticing a change in Hoskins. He started having delusional fantasies about Madonna, claiming that she had picked him up while hitchhiking one day and that they partied together and had sex. The pathology of stalking is rooted in what's called the 4 pattern: fixated, obsessed, unwanted, repeated, driven by distorted perceptions and intense emotional states rather than a single psychological profile. Most perpetrators have diagnosable clinical conditions, primarily cluster B personality disorders, psychosis, or erotomania, which fuel their intrusive behaviors, emotional volatility, and often their fixation on the target.
What is cluster B disorders?
So cluster B personality disorders would be like borderline personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, or narcissistic personality disorder.
Gotcha. The big 4.
Sure.
If you will.
Yeah. Forensic psychiatry categorizes the pathology of stalking based on the underlying motivation and psychological profile of the perpetrator. So there's the rejected stalker, which is often associated with antisocial or borderline personality disorder, characterized by a fundamental inability to accept rejection or the end of a relationship. It's driven by a desire for reconciliation, revenge, or to reassert power and control over a victim. Then there's the intimacy seeker, who often presents with delusional disorders such as erotomania or severe social isolation, where the perpetrator genuinely believes the victim is their soulmate and that the feeling is mutual. Erotomania is a rare psychiatric condition where an individual has a fixed delusional belief that another person, often someone of higher social status or a celebrity, is deeply in love with them. So that's most likely what Robert Dewey Hoskins was motivated by. Then there's the incompetent suitor, which generally stems from social incompetence, loneliness, or limited cognitive and social skills. They're seeking a relationship or intimacy, but using inappropriate and clumsy pursuit methods due to a lack of understanding regarding social cues and appropriate boundaries. Then there's the resentful stalker, driven by feelings of grievance, paranoia, or persecutory delusions. And then there's the predatory stalker, who is highly linked to paraphilic disorders, psychopathy, or antisocial personality disorders, motivated by systematic preparation and surveillance for a sexual or violent assault. So if you ask me what Robert Dewey Hoskins probably was, the intimacy seeker. There was some erotomania happening, and he believed that Madonna was in love with him, and knew who he was, and he had had personal encounters with her when that was not true. So there was something going on up there.
He was also incredibly violent.
Yes, he was an incredibly violent man who had these very scary delusions. But I just wanted a little background on stalkers.
Yeah, I guess I'd never heard like it laid out like that before, so thoroughly and so eloquently
from
my dad.
Well, thank you. So Madonna's career was taking off. She was rising alongside the biggest pop stars of her time. And she, of course, had no idea who Robert Dewey Hoskins was. The Like a Virgin era was the birth of the Material Girl. And throughout the duration of her career, Madonna has been called the Material Girl. She performed Like a Virgin at the very first MTV VMA Awards, and it was so provocative and forward with her sexuality that people were very shocked by her performance. She pushed the envelope often, and it worked. She had the talent, drive, and pathological need to be popular and notorious. But her increasing success brought on more intense media scrutiny. She was constantly a topic of discussion, and her brief marriage to Hollywood bad boy Sean Penn was only fuel for the fire. They shot a movie called Shanghai Surprise together, which was a total disaster and one of the worst films of all time, according to Madonna historians.
Really?
Yes.
Even the people who are like her fans are like, yeah, this sucked.
Yeah, they were like, this was objectively a terrible movie. Like, yeah, Madonna is stunning, but the movie sucks.
Well, there's a dud every now and again.
Yeah. So that was at the time when Sean Penn was at his most combative when it came to paparazzi. So they were always in the tabloids together. They were huge news. He was a mega movie star and she was the biggest pop star. It was a recipe for gossip and lots of eyes on them. Their relationship did eventually end, but Madonna continued to be a topic of discussion. By 1991, Madonna had three multi-platinum albums to her name when she released the Truth or Dare documentary, which chronicled Madonna's controversial 1990 Blonde Ambition international tour. The film was a behind-the-scenes look at Madonna's relationships with her dancers and her crew, her then-boyfriend Warren Beatty, and her family and friends, achieving an intimate glimpse into the boundary-pushing singer's drive and individuality. It was a very controversial film that upped the ante on her raunchy reputation. Nothing like that had ever been done before. It changed pop culture history forever. It gave the general public a look into who Madonna really was and only increased the public's obsession with her. So before, she was just this mega pop star that everyone thought they knew, and now she puts out this documentary showing who she really is behind the scenes, and it only made people love her more and think they knew her better when in reality, it was very parasocial.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess like Like, I wasn't alive back then, but I have to imagine the number of people putting themselves out there in an authentic way where it's like, oh, look at what my day-to-day life is kind of like, was super low.
This was right? The first of its kind. Yeah.
Was it the first one?
Yeah.
So that had to be super wild because everything up until that point for however long it was going on, it was just like this very curated image of whoever you wanted people to see.
Yeah, they were a stage presence.
Right. And it's just, it's not a real person.
Right.
You know? So yeah, I don't know. It's wild to hear this because like, I think now, especially with podcasts, like this is kind of what people use podcasts and like YouTube for.
Yeah.
Is to kind of get a view into like who actually are the celebrities that you admire.
Right. And same with social media. Like it's just such a deeper look into who a person is.
Right.
Even if you don't know who they are personally, it's like you know so much about them. And that's how these like intense parasocial relationships are formed.
Yeah.
So this was the first look into, you know, a pop star's day to day. And it made people obsessed with her.
Yeah. I was like, the stalking probably skyrocketed after this one, right?
I'm sure it did. Yeah. I mean, it definitely was intriguing to Robert Dewey Hoskins, who already felt like he knew her very well. And meanwhile, he was gaining a terrible reputation with police and becoming increasingly delusional. Law enforcement in Oregon and Northern California were very familiar with Hoskins because of various run-ins over seemingly minor traffic incidents that escalated into altercations with police officers. So he seemed like he was kind of a nightmare to deal with in any scenario.
How is he not in jail? You said he had domestic violence and attempted murder charges on him?
Sometimes those things just slip through the cracks, you know?
I mean, that's disgusting.
Well, no. Yes.
They're not prosecuting an attempted murder charge? I'm fed up.
Okay, I'm going to keep going. He engaged in violence chronically in a variety of circumstances. Hoskins' brother, Michael, said his brother had hit an officer over the head with a lead pipe.
How is he not in jail?
He was arrested, and in his cell, he stuck his head into the toilet and kept flushing the toilet and yelling that he was trying to drown himself. So he was a very mentally unstable man. And he got off on that charge because of insanity, or insanity plea.
So we plea insanity, and now we're out in public again.
I guess so.
Because we're insane.
It's not a good system.
What the fuck?
I agree.
Seriously? So he's crazy enough to get off of this charge and then is not put in a institution?
That's what I'm saying.
What?
He hit a police officer over the head with a lead pipe and he got off.
So now he's not even in control of his own actions and he's just allowed to go out there and do it again. Like it truly boggles the mind.
It does, but that is what happened.
Was this Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
Get your shit together, Oregon.
Okay.
In the 90s.
In the 90s? Yeah. All right. I'm going to keep going again. By 1994, Hoskins' life was crumbling around him. His wife filed for divorce and took his 5 children away, and the obsession with Madonna appeared to have started about a year before he approached her property, according to his brother and his brother's wife. He was living on their farm with them in Oregon, and his brother said he was doing way too much amphetamines, and they were tired of his behavior on the farm. His drugs of choice were meth and heroin. So on top of being incredibly mentally unstable just on his own, he's also taking meth and heroin.
He's getting a little help.
Yeah, a little extra boost.
This whole situation is just like a complete failure of the legal system to protect him from himself and others. No?
So far, yep.
Yeah.
When using amphetamine chronically, you can develop what's called an amphetamine delusional disorder that makes you entertain fixed and false beliefs. You become delusional because of the drug. But as I said just before, he wasn't only delusional because of the drugs. He was delusional because he was mentally unwell. And then the drugs made it worse. His behavior went from bizarre to dangerous, and his obsession with Madonna only escalated. He not only told family members he and Madonna had partied and slept together, but he was now saying he was going to go to Los Angeles to meet her at her residence and make her his wife. On one occasion, he had claimed he was married to Madonna and had seen God, and God told him they were destined to be together forever. Robert Hoskins was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. People with significant head trauma are more prone to seizure disorder and tend to get dementia earlier in life, and they can also have psychotic symptoms as well. And it seems like that may have been what happened in his case, because he did have a pretty severe head trauma earlier on in his life.
Yeah, I mean, his environment did not set him up for success.
No, definitely not.
And then he got hit by a car.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Before he had become obsessed with Madonna, he had no stable job, a felony violent criminal history, he was now estranged from his family, his wife had left him and taken the kids, and he was a complete loser. So he really didn't have much to lose. And he was all the time fueled by his delusions. So Hoskins formulated a plan that would bring him closer to Madonna. After Truth or Dare, the documentary, Madonna had released her Erotica album, which was also very controversial. It was overtly sexual, and Madonna's sound and look had changed a lot. She was much more sexy. And she then released a sex book, which was essentially softcore porn. Madonna around this time had purchased a house in the Hollywood Hills, right by the Hollywood sign. It was like a castle off of Mulholland Highway, looking over the Hollywood Reservoir with forested land and jogging trails all around it, and a long, winding driveway that was about a quarter mile long. Bugsy Siegel had used it as a speakeasy and a brothel when he was running the mob out of LA in the 1930s and 40s. But Madonna bought this house, painted stripes on the outside, and called it Castillo del Lago, Castle by the Lake. There were people in Hollywood who sold maps of the stars' homes, and Madonna's house became a permanent fixture on this star map available throughout the city. The houses on these maps are not always for people who live in the houses now. Sometimes it's a home that a star used to live in, but sometimes it's their actual home. And in Madonna's case, it was actually her home. Not only that, but her home was right next to Lake Hollywood and directly off the path of a very popular hike near the Hollywood sign. So there were constantly people there, and pretty much everyone knew that she lived in this castle by the lake. People were constantly ringing the doorbell, leaving notes, and hanging around outside. So in the 2 years that her bodyguard lived in this house, he took about 15 to 20 people into custody who had actually come over the fence, attempting to find Madonna.
Yeah, Queen, it's time to move.
She wasn't always there. She, you know, went around a lot. She traveled a lot, but still.
I get it. But, you know, this is your home. This is your, like, safe space. Time to go.
Yeah.
Move to, like, Palm Springs or something. Move away.
Right.
Go hang out with the gays. They love you anyway.
That's true. The only way to get in was through the front. In the back, it was straight, steep mountains, and there were very large walls around the whole property. But the high walls did not deter Hoskins.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
As Madonna was settling into her new home, Robert Hoskins was living on his brother's farm in Oregon, but making plans to head south. And in April of 1995, Hoskins left the farm and headed to Los Angeles. His destination would be Madonna's home. When you get to the main house, there were many ways to access it. There were stairs, an elevator, or a side staircase by the carport to the pool area. It was a huge estate with a bunch of levels. Madonna's bodyguard, Basil Steve Stevens.
The names of these people are fantastic.
His job was to make sure nobody got into the estate and take care of Madonna while she was on the property. He had been a bodyguard for a very long time. He'd actually been Michael Jackson's bodyguard. And he had been in the military, so he was a very experienced bodyguard.
He's not messing around.
No. And he was living there at Madonna's house right after he had gotten divorced, so he needed a place to live, and this was the perfect opportunity for him. So her bodyguard actually lives in her house, and that was his only job, to make sure it was safe and keep her safe.
Question. What happens when he sleeps?
They have an alarm system, and maybe they had another bodyguard that was like on the night shift, but he was the main guy.
I was like, she needs a 24-hour roto, you know?
Yeah. Stevens was no stranger to people trying to get onto this property. They had many attempts over the years, so every inch of that property was under surveillance, and anytime one of the areas was breached, an alarm would go off. Basil Steve Stevens was in his room watching over the mountains, and he immediately saw a white man throwing his duffel bag over the fence. So Stevens put on his firearm and went downstairs to greet him.
He came out with the click-clack.
Yeah. Little did he know, Hoskins was deeply mentally unwell and was set out to harm Madonna. But this was not his first rodeo, so he had a decent idea of what to expect. It's never a friendly interaction.
No.
As soon as Hoskins saw Stevens, he turned around and ran very quickly in the other direction. He threw his bag back over the fence and took off, so Stevens thought that would be the end of it. He reported it to police, but since it was just a simple trespassing, nobody thought anything of it. I don't even think the police came out to the area because he had left.
Also, this has happened like 20 other times.
Yes. For Madonna, dealing with crazed fans was nothing new, but most of them didn't actually enter her property. And they didn't know it at the time, but Hoskins was a whole different level of threat. About 2 weeks later, Madonna was in town and out on a run with her personal trainer. And Hoskins came back once again and rang the doorbell. Stevens went to the front gate, and Hoskins gave him his name, saying, "My name is Robert Hoskins, and Madonna is my wife."
Right.
When Stevens told him, "No, she's not," Hoskins immediately got worked up and began screaming at him. Stevens told Hoskins to go away, and at that point, he told Stevens, "I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to slit Madonna's throat from ear to ear if I can't have her." He told Stevens he had a note for her that Stevens needed to pass on to Madonna. The note said, quote, "I'm very sorry. Meet me somewhere, love, for keeps. I love you. Will you be my wife for keeps?" And he signed it, Robert Dewey Hoskins, a few times. And there were hearts drawn all over it. Will you be my wife for keeps?
For keeps, you know, maybe that's what will win her over.
That wording specifically really pulls on the heartstrings. The note was written on a religious paper. It was a biblical text written by an evangelical pastor, Tony Alamo, who was a federal convict. And on top was in bold capital letters, "Defiled." And on top of that, he wrote "Madonna." And underneath it, he wrote "To Louise Ciccone." So basically he's saying, "Madonna is defiled, and this is to Louise Ciccone." Meaning like all of the very provocative sexual behavior she's been doing is wrong, and she's defiled herself, and he wants to bring her back to who she was before she was Madonna.
Right. Here's the problem. That's her real name, dude.
Right. The religious text was talking about adultery, and if you had sex with anyone but your spouse, you should be killed. And with that in mind, Robert Dewey Hoskins believes that Madonna is his wife, and he's seeing her in the news with all of her many, you know, boyfriends and, you know, love affairs and whatever. And he's basically saying, "You're cheating on me, and I would like to kill you because of it." So this note was very layered and very scary.
And just four words.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I'm unable to wrap my head around how this type of psyche emerges.
Well, he's very mentally unwell. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah. Well, as my mother says this, and she's so right, that you can't make sense of crazy.
Sure, yeah.
So don't try.
That's good advice. This letter was beyond frightening. Steve told him to go away, and at that point, Hoskins began walking back down the dirt road. And at the same time, Madonna was riding up on her bicycle with her trainer.
Oh, no.
As he was walking away from the property, he went right past Madonna and her trainer and didn't recognize her.
He didn't even...
They were within 2 feet of each other.
Who did he think she was?
She probably had sunglasses and a hat on, and like a lot of people were on that walking path. But yeah, he walked right past her. As I mentioned earlier, the road leading up to her house was also a walking path around the lake for hiking, so it was not uncommon at all to see people walking, and Madonna and her trainer didn't think anything of it. By the time she got up to the house, Steve was right there, and he hurried her inside because he didn't know if Hoskins had seen her and was going to come back. Stevens told her the same guy who had hopped the fence was just there looking for her, which was very unsettling for Madonna. At that point, Basil Stevens was really concerned for Madonna's safety, but he knew she was leaving in 3 or 4 days, which made him feel a little bit better. He was very cautious and stayed vigilant and tried not to leave the house at all in the next few days. He contacted LAPD again and handed them the note that gave them Robert Dewey Hoskins' name. He called LAPD's Threat Management Unit, which specialized in stalking cases. He had them come out to the property and told them about the 2 incidents they had already had with this man. Hoskins didn't care if people knew who he was. He already had 2 felony offenses, as far as Madonna was concerned. The threat to murder Steve Stevens, which was a criminal threat, and the threat to slit Madonna's throat, which was also a felony criminal threat. So they wanted to get him into custody, but unfortunately, Hoskins was a drifter living on the streets of Los Angeles, so they had no idea where he was, and they were unable to find him. There was really nothing they could do, so Madonna just continued to work, and they continued to wait for him to reappear. Around that time, she had decided to soften her image a bit and launched into a new public romance. While she was filming the movie Evita in 1995, she met Carlos Leon, a personal trainer in New York City. Every day she was running in Central Park with Carlos, and the paparazzi took countless photos of them. People were obsessed with them because he was a guy that nobody knew. He wasn't a famous person, he was just some random personal trainer, and now they were together. So everyone was very intrigued and wanted to know more about him and how the 2 got together and had a child together. Carlos and Madonna's relationship made Hoskins' desire to make contact with Madonna only intensify. Prosecutor Rhonda Saunders specialized in stalking and threat cases and was called by Madonna's team and told her that they had a case for her, but they couldn't find the stalker. And since the area where Madonna lived was up in the hills and had all kinds of ravines and things around it, they knew someone could hide in there. So they didn't know if Hoskins was, like, somewhere on the streets of Los Angeles or if he was literally hiding in a bush outside of Madonna's house. They hoped he wouldn't come back again, but that was wishful thinking because Hoskins was determined to get face to face with Madonna.
Yeah, I mean, this is a matter of when.
Right.
Unless he, you know, passes away.
Or fixates on something new.
I guess.
Which it didn't seem like he was going to do. A few weeks later, Hoskins returned once again. On the evening of May 29th, 1995, it was another Sunday night, around 7 or 8 o'clock, when Stevens once again saw Hoskins had scaled one of the very tall walls and bent back one of the steel poles holding the fencing, and he entered the property. He crept up to the front door and tried to look inside. Stevens had watched this guy throw his duffel bag over a 9-foot fence, scale it, and climb into the pool area. He recognized him immediately from the other 2 incidents, and Steve Stevens called 911 to report this trespasser. However, that wasn't a high enough priority for the LAPD, so they were going to be a while. He also called the local security patrol, since they had a patrol that stayed in the area that they specifically paid for, so he called them as well, because he knew he would need backup before the police got there. But as of right now, Stevens knew he was on his own for a little bit. And by that time, Hoskins decided he was going to take a swim in Madonna's pool. So he stripped down naked and jumped into the pool. His plan was to take a swim, go inside and take a shower in the primary bedroom, get himself all prettied up, go downstairs and make Madonna dinner, have a candlelight dinner with her, and then kill her.
Did he write this down somewhere? Is that how we know?
I think he probably just confessed to this plan because he was not hiding it.
And what? So, like, Madonna's not home?
No, she's not home.
And the security guard is just, like, watching him skinny dip?
Yep.
Is this broad daylight?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. By that point, the backup security guard had gotten there, and Stevens went out back to confront Hoskins.
Hey, man, you can't be here.
Yeah. And
what
also,
are you doing?
The backup security guard, for whatever reason, was like, you go confront him. I'm going to wait here. So it was
They didn't even go with 2 people?
No, it was just Stevens.
Like, what if this guy's got a gun?
Right. But he was like, I don't know if he was freaked out or what, but he's like, I'm going to wait for 911.
This is your job, dude. Go get up there and wait, can you point your gun at him or something?
Sure.
Can you make a citizen's arrest?
I mean,
he's
absolutely trespassing and this is their job. This their
I know,
security.
But, yeah, I don't know what the laws are, if they can actually like arrest him or pin him down. I don't know.
Yes, they can.
Legally.
So as he's coming out of the water, Stevens confronts him. He said, "Hey, why don't you just calm down, get dressed, and we'll wait for the police. They're on their way and we'll sort it all out." Because as soon as he saw Stevens, he got extremely agitated and was like screaming and yelling and whatever. So he's like, "Hey man, calm down, get out of the water, and we're going to wait for the police." So Steve coaxed him out of the pool. And as he was getting dressed, he asked Hoskins to stop reaching his hand into his bag because he didn't know if he had a gun. So he's like, "Listen, you got to stop." But Hoskins immediately began freaking out, telling him something along the lines of, "I own this place. You're trespassing. I want you gone now. If you don't get out of here, I'm going to kill you." The other security guard by that point had gotten freaked out and told Stevens that he was going to go wait downstairs. Okay, so he had come up with Stevens, but then once he started cursing and freaking out, he's like, "I'm going to go downstairs. You take this one."
Are you not like more safe with two people?
Tag, you're it. That's what he said.
Tag, you're it. Yeah. Wow. He's getting demoted, dude.
Yeah, this was really bad because Hoskins had gotten so worked up. He was like red in the face and he was extremely agitated. And then he ran at Stevens and he wouldn't let go. They struggled together in the yard, and at one point, Hoskins got his hand around Stevens' throat and was reaching for his gun as he was trying to yell for the other security that he hoped was already there. Stevens was yelling, "He's going for my gun." And Stevens was fighting for his life at this point. His adrenaline went through the roof. Stevens managed to grab his gun and fired off two shots. He shot him once at close range in the arm and once in the stomach, and then Hoskins went down. When the LAPD arrived at the home, there was an ambulance, a helicopter, and six LAPD officers, fire department, along with the Hollywood Homicide Unit in tow, because nobody believed he'd survive the shots because he was shot twice with a high-caliber handgun. One of the officers asked Hoskins what happened, and he said, "Well, I tried to kill that guy before he shot me first."
Well, there you have it.
And she looked at the firefighters and asked, "Did you hear that?" And they said, "Yep." So with that, he had no defense. He had admitted to what he was doing to witnesses. So he said, "I tried to kill that guy, but he shot me first." So you can't even claim like, "Oh man, this guy shot me out of nowhere." It's like he actively was defending himself.
Right. Yeah. The other bodyguard that just noped out of there has got to be looking like such a clown right now, right?
Yeah, not great.
If he was there, he would have been able to help him.
Oh yeah, totally. But as terrifying and as dangerous as this all was, Stevens didn't want Hoskins to die. He didn't want to be responsible for another person's death. You know, he had a gun, but he didn't necessarily want to shoot it at someone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure this is not a fun thing to do.
Right.
But, you know, when you're coming at somebody and then reaching for their gun, like...
Yeah, if it's you or another person, you're going to save your life. But he didn't necessarily want to shoot him.
He didn't really have a choice.
No, he didn't. And he said to this day, he hasn't shot anyone else.
And good for him.
Yeah. But yeah, like we said, this was a life or death scenario. It was going to either be him or Hoskins. And he didn't want to die that day. And to everyone's surprise, Hoskins pulled through and told police he was trying to get Stevens' gun. So he's like, "Yeah, I was trying to kill him and get his gun, but he shot me first."
He is nothing if not consistent, I guess.
Yeah, that is true. And it was kind of Stevens' saving grace because he was worried that he was going to get in trouble because he had shot this guy, but he was fully admitting to everything that happened, which was great for him. Hoskins was sent to Cedars-Sinai for treatment, and Rhonda Saunders took the case at that point. She filed charges after she spoke to Madonna because she wanted to make sure that she would cooperate with them. When Madonna, who was in Miami at the time, heard that Stevens had shot Hoskins at her home, she was understandably terrified. She had already been having nightmares about Hoskins chasing her, and now it felt like she was actually living this bad dream. She said, quote, "I couldn't believe it was actually happening, and he had tried to make his threats reality." When Madonna spoke on the phone with Rhonda, she told her that she was terrified, but she would cooperate. However, she wanted to leave Los Angeles because she was having nightmares. Anytime she would hear a noise, she would be up all night because she was scared that he had gotten in again.
Yeah, time to go.
October 30th, 1995, a judge set a trial date, and Rhonda needed Madonna's testimony to convict Hoskins, but Madonna had changed her mind and was refusing to take the stand. She had just gotten the role of Evita, and it was going to be a huge movie. But they had to get this trial finished within 60 days of his arraignment, otherwise the case would get dismissed. And unsurprisingly, the defense refused to wait. But unfortunately for the prosecution, Madonna was avoiding them, and they could not get Madonna under subpoena, so the case got dismissed. But thankfully, Rhonda was able to refile it, which meant Hoskins didn't walk, at least not yet. Rhonda knew that she had to get Madonna into court no matter what it took, otherwise this time he would walk. They had a great case, but they didn't have the victim, which they needed.
But how is she the victim? She wasn't even in the same state. Because, so, like, isn't that victim not Stevens?
Yes, but he's stalking Madonna. So they're taking on this stalking case. He's not stalking Stevens.
Oh, okay. But, like, doesn't he get, I don't know, assault, attempted murder? I mean, he said it himself. He was trying to shoot Stevens.
Yeah, but this wasn't a very straightforward case. They were specifically going at him for stalking. So it was a little more complicated than that. The point being, they needed Madonna to make this stick and for him to get convicted.
Yeah, why is she not cooperating?
She didn't want to.
She's like, I have a movie to shoot.
Yeah, she didn't want to deal with it. She was scared of him, for one. She didn't want to, like, add fuel to the fire and be in the same room as him. And she had better things to do. She's like, this is over. You can figure it out without me.
Actually, we can't.
Right, but Madonna didn't want to go to court. It had been many months and the whole thing was out of sight, out of mind for her. She avoided it by quietly moving between New York and Los Angeles. So Rhonda began sending LAPD officers to stake out her house to secure a testimony from her. Someone close to her had called Rhonda and told her the dog had arrived, which was a code because whenever Madonna would go to one of her houses, she would send her dog ahead of her a couple of days, which meant that she was coming back to California. So they're like, listen, her dog is here. That means she's going to be here in a few days. So Rhonda would be sending Detective Andy Purdy to stake out Madonna's house. And with that, he would have a subpoena to force Madonna to testify. It would not be easy, but she knew she wouldn't have a chance without it. So Purdy staked out the house and waited for Madonna to arrive to serve her the papers. They knew when Madonna was in California, she had a regular routine where every day at 2 o'clock, she would go jogging. And sure enough, there she was at 2 p.m. So Andy and his partner tried pulling their car up next to her as she ran, and they rolled down the window and attempted to serve her these papers, saying, this is a subpoena, we have to do this trial. But she cursed him out and wouldn't take the papers. And that really got him angry, so he jumped out of the car and began running after her himself. He managed to get right behind her and stuck the subpoena under her arm. He said, you've been served, be in court tomorrow. She said something else, described as quote-unquote not ladylike, and let the subpoena drop onto the dirt and literally ran over it, leaving a dirt footprint right on the front page of the subpoena. When Andy brought it back to Rhonda, the footprint was still on the page.
Well, that went well.
Rhonda wasn't going to let this case slip through the cracks. She wanted Hoskins to go to prison, and then after that, hopefully lock down in a mental hospital where he belonged.
Right.
But Madonna wasn't coming to court. So Rhonda upped the ante with a $5 million body attachment, which meant Madonna would have to show up to court or pay $5 million.
I'm going to be honest, she might just pay it.
Yeah, right? She's Madonna.
She might just pay it.
She probably has the $5 million to blow, which would be a crazy thing to do. But
Queen, go to court for one day.
Yeah.
You know?
It goes to show how scared she was of this man.
I get it, but you know, they got that shit locked down.
So Rhonda would have to address this decision to put a body attachment on Madonna in front of the jury, which in a way probably helped their case because it proved that Madonna was terrified of this man. Like, she wouldn't come to court without the threat of having to pay $5 million. She just wanted the case to be handled, but she didn't want to be involved. So Rhonda got a call from her lawyer who said that Madonna was not happy at all about this body attachment.
Yeah, no shit.
She was asked to release the body attachment and she would show up for trial. So she's like, as long as you release it, I'll show up.
Nope.
But Rhonda was like, yeah, right. They had such a problem trying to track her down the first time, the case was dismissed. This was their final chance to get the guy.
Yeah, we're not giving up our leverage.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
The trial was set for January of 1996, and against her wishes, Madonna would be forced to go face to face with a mentally unstable man who promised to slit her throat if he couldn't have her.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here.
Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hoskins had told police in an interview that he believed Madonna was the mother of all. She was God, and she was running the world. And that he was trying to find her after he married her, when she was in male form on a tour bus in Denver, Colorado.
Wait, what?
While on a tour bus in Denver, Colorado, Hoskins ended up sitting next to a man, and he believed the entity of Madonna was in that man, and that he married this entity in a spiritual way on this tour bus. The man went his separate way, as did Hoskins, but after that, he knew he needed to be reunited with this Madonna entity. He believed Madonna was an entity that moved from body to body, and it was his destiny to be together with Madonna. But the persona that she was portraying for the media was not what Hoskins envisioned his wife to be. So in his mind, he's already married to her because he married her on a tour bus in Denver, Colorado, when her entity was in the body of a man. It makes perfect sense. Keep up. Duh.
So can you describe the spiritual experience that he had with this man? Did they ploink?
Enlightening.
Enlightening?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Okay.
You asked me to give you a word. I don't know.
I meant like what happened between this guy and Hoskins?
I don't know. He just said, I was sitting next to a man on a tour bus and the entity of Madonna was in his body and I spiritually married the entity of Madonna as I sat next to this man. So maybe he had a ceremony in his mind. How are you? What did your mother say? Don't try to make sense of crazy. Jesus Christ.
Listen to your mother. I mean, so the other guy has no idea what has happened.
No, he has no idea that he is spiritually married to Robert Dewey Hoskins.
Wow. The depth and intensity of a person's reality around you can truly be otherworldly.
Yes. I'm honestly glad that that man didn't get attacked himself. You know, that was my first thought, was he's sitting next to this man who he believes is Madonna, and he's a very dangerous, violent man. It's a wonder that he let this man just walk in the different direction, and he walked away.
Yeah, and there's just no rhyme or reason.
No, none whatsoever. In search of the embodiment of Madonna, he decided to hitchhike his way to New York to find her. He made it all the way to the MTV offices, although she wasn't there. They told her she was in LA. So Hoskins hitchhiked his way back to LA and found himself in Hollywood. In LA, Hoskins was living and sleeping on the street. So he was going around Hollywood asking people where Madonna was, and a lot of people knew, which was how he ended up at her house.
Sorry, did we go back in time?
Yes.
He's currently in jail, right?
Yes, he's currently in jail. I'm just giving you the background. So he, you know, thought he was married to her spiritually, and then he went all the way to New York, hitchhiked all the way to LA. That's how he made it to LA, and then went on her property multiple times. But now he's arrested.
Yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm.
The motivation was there.
He's a scary man. No. So in January of 1996, Robert Hoskins' trial began. In addition to the stalking charges, Hoskins was accused of making terrorist threats and assault. As the trial approached, prosecutor Rhonda Saunders received a call from another Hoskins victim, his ex-wife. Gail Hoskins had read Rhonda's name in the paper and called her to beg her to please keep him locked up. He had been abusive to not only her, but to their five children, to the point where she changed her name and moved from Washington State to Florida. Pretty far.
That might be about as far away from Washington as you can get.
Pretty much. She told Rhonda a story about the time Hoskins had taken their two-year-old child and thrown him down a flight of stairs and broken the child's arm. He told her if she went to the police, he'd kill all the other children in front of her. That's what he said.
Whoa.
So the stakes were extremely high. This man was, as we know, very dangerous and scary, and the anticipation had been building around Hollywood for this trial. One of the biggest stars in the world was going to court to face her violent stalker. It was a media frenzy. But it was still up in the air if Madonna would even show up. Journalists and photographers lined the streets around the courthouse. Rhonda said in court very dramatically, "The people call Madonna Ciccone," and she walked in. She was dressed in a stark black suit, her hair was pulled back into a bun, and she had very little makeup, and she took the stand. Rhonda had managed to get Madonna to court, but she still needed to testify in front of the jury about how terrified she actually was. She asked Madonna, "You didn't want to come here, did you?" And Madonna told her, "No." Rhonda said, "You said you're afraid of this man." Madonna said, "Yes." "Then why didn't you want to come here to testify?" She said, "The reason is I'm sick to my stomach that I am deeply disturbed being in this room with this man who has threatened my life, has threatened to defile me, and we have made his fantasies come true, and he's getting what he wants, which is to be 10 feet away from me." Despite Madonna's testimony, Hoskins wasn't discouraged. As Rhonda was sitting in court that day, she began hearing something really weird coming from the other end of the counsel table, where he was sitting with his defense lawyer. Then she realized, as Madonna was testifying, Hoskins was humming "Like a Virgin," which is maybe intimidation, or maybe he's just a creepy dude who's obsessed with Madonna. Hard to say.
He's detached from reality.
Right.
But even he knows a good song when he sees one.
That's true. It's a good song. While in prison during the trial, Hoskins continued to make his obsession public. He was very proud of the fact that he was now known in jail as the Material Man.
Oh my God.
Rhonda got a call from one of the jailers who walked past Hoskins' cell, and he told Rhonda on the wall in big letters was, "I love Madonna, Madonna loves me." And underneath his cot, in bigger letters, he had written "The Madonna Stalker," which was what he had been becoming known as in the news. And he loved that. Any defendant with mental health concerns requires a proper evaluation, so Saunders brought in two renowned forensic psychologists to offer their opinion. Dr. Chris Mahondi went in to interview Hoskins and videotaped it, and after reviewing it later on, it was very clear this man did probably have a major mental disorder. He was now amphetamine-free, so they could conclude that the drugs weren't to blame for his major mental disorder, and that he had one separate from his drug use. Hoskins had this belief that Madonna was God, and that her entity had existed since the beginning of time and would possess different physical bodies. So this is what we've gained from the interview with a doctor. He believed that Steve Stevens, Madonna's bodyguard, who had shot him, was not actually Stevens. In that moment, Madonna's entity had moved into Stevens' body, and when he was shot, it was Madonna who had actually shot him.
Wow, Madonna, not cool.
He explained how his whole thought process worked. Madonna was the mother of all, and she ran the world, and he was trying to find her after he married her when she was in male form on a tour bus in Denver, Colorado. This all made sense to him because there was a flesh world and a spirit world, and there were very unique components about how this all came together within his delusions. It was important for them to understand his delusions to possibly predict what he would do in the future, and also to know why he was doing this in the first place. The jury ultimately found Hoskins guilty on all charges: stalking, making terrorist threats, and assault of Steve Stevens. He was handed down a sentence of 10 years in prison. Immediately after the verdict, Madonna said, quote, "I'm very relieved that the defendant has been convicted in this case and justice has been served. I hope the outcome of this case helps other stalking victims know the system can and does work." But she's also Madonna, so like things work a little faster for her, you know?
Yeah.
Stalking is notoriously very difficult to deal with legally.
They kind of had a slam dunk case here, right? I mean, he made direct threats of violence and then acted on them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, glad they put him away. Also, I was thinking when they were describing this day in court, they're like, oh, Madonna goes to face her stalker. It's like, not really. She goes to, because she has to put him away. You know, it's not even, it's to give testimony, not to like face him, you know?
No, right. She didn't want to be there.
I know. But I'm also thinking, like, why does he even have to be there? Like, can't she just kind of go up like, okay, can you identify this man? Like, is this the guy? She goes, yes. He gets ushered out of there. Like, I don't know. Can we not just like have, especially like for other victims, like, do they have to be there the whole time they're testifying? Can't they just be like, all right, you got to go, and then we'll bring you back in when this is done. We'll record the transcript. You can review it, whatever. Your lawyer can be here.
Yeah, that is what happened.
You got to go.
That's what happened with Eva LaRue. who I talked about a little while ago. She's another famous actress who was stalked for, I think it was like 12 years or something. And her stalking case was insane. But when she eventually made it into court, she and her daughter were physically in the courtroom, but her stalker was not. He was on FaceTime or something. Like, he wasn't physically in the room because of how big of a mental toll he had taken on Eva LaRue and her daughter at that point. So they decided that it wasn't necessary for him to physically be in the room because that would just cause more turmoil for no reason.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, this should be a maybe more readily available option.
Yeah.
To a victim.
I feel like there was probably not a very good reason for him to be physically in the courtroom if Madonna was that scared of him, but that's how it played out. And she, I guess, quote unquote, faced him, even though it was kind of against her will.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, the most catchy headline.
Right. Investigators were very pleased with the outcome. The threat was put away and Madonna could return to her normal life. She had moved out of the country and was living in England. So she's like, let me get as far away from this as I possibly can. And I don't blame her.
Yeah.
15 years later in 2011, Hoskins had completed his prison term and...
Wait, 15 years?
Yeah, so I think his stay was lengthened.
He had an extended stay.
Yeah, extended, thank you. He was evaluated by prison psychologists who determined he was still a threat. And at that point, he was placed on an involuntary psychiatric hold and was transferred to Patton State Hospital, which is a secured mental facility. He was given an extended sentence in a state hospital. And his obsession with Madonna had not diminished at all. He stayed 7 years in Patton State Hospital, but there are laws in place in California for hospitals like Patton to notify the victim and law enforcement prior to discharge of an inmate that's been held there in relation to criminal charges. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, and he got out under the radar after his extended stay of another 7 years.
Oh, so are there like limits to how long they can keep him?
You know, I'm not sure if there are limits, but at some point he got out and it had been an extra 7 years. I mean, he had overstayed his sentence by almost double at that point, or potentially maybe more because I said 15 years later.
Yeah.
So it's
if it was like one after the other. Or...
Yeah. He went directly into the mental facility. So it was like he had basically doubled his sentence.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, if it's really that easy to just keep somebody away, seems like it could be abused, but
right.
Sounds like for this case, it was maybe
necessary.
Warranted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at this point, he's out and he turned to web designer Odell Bodie to help him take his rantings online about Madonna. And when he came in to talk to Odell, he introduced himself as Robert Dewey Hoskins, the convicted Madonna stalker. He's still wearing this title with pride. And Odell at first was like, okay, whoa, this is a lot, but I'm just a web designer person, so I'll help you with what you need. Odell told Hoskins to get a domain name and asked him what he wanted that to be, and Hoskins said convictedmadonnastalker.com. Although Hoskins' website was never published online, his plan was to upload videos to show his side of the story. However, his recordings only revealed a deeper look into the evolution of his obsession and how deeply mentally unstable this man actually was. The public and media also didn't help because they began to make his delusional identity real by referring to him as the Madonna stalker. So he was always associated with her, which is what he wanted. Out in the world, he now had this real identity, and that was a problem. It was obvious that he hadn't changed one bit and was getting the attention that he so desperately wanted.
Wait, what year did he get out?
This was somewhere around 2011 or 2012.
Okay, so adolescent internet.
Yes.
Right? I mean, he could have just uploaded to YouTube at that point.
I'm glad he didn't know.
Yeah.
In a matter of months, he was arrested for a vandalism charge. And at the time he was arrested, he was very violent with police and kicked out the windows of the police car, which added another count of vandalism to his charge. He did several weeks at a county facility, and prior to his discharge, a clinician evaluated him and he was placed on another involuntary psychiatric hold. The state of California sought a conservatorship over Hoskins, which meant the state of California was his legal guardian, and they could decide what was in his best interest. And because of that, he was assigned to a Metropolitan State Hospital, another secured facility for long-term treatment and evaluation. And in 2012, Hoskins escaped. And Madonna was playing the Super Bowl that year. He wanted to watch her on television at the facility, and they refused to let him, so he escaped from the facility. But they're like, damn, we should have just let him watch her.
I'm like, well, what is the actual harm in this? Like, he's not going to change. You know, he's like, been obsessed with her for 30 years.
Yeah, just let him watch it.
Let him watch it.
Yeah, he's never going to stop obsessing over her. So his plan was to go to Indianapolis and confront her at the Super Bowl prior to her performance. He planned to jump a freight train, go to Indianapolis, and get to her that way. When he escaped, Madonna's bodyguard was notified so he could be on the lookout for Hoskins.
Put out a bolo.
Yeah. The LAPD said in a statement, quote, Hoskins is highly psychotic when not taking his medication and can be extremely violent, but they didn't elaborate after that.
Is there more to say?
Nope. That's pretty good.
Pretty much
headline.
It.
Hoskins was hiding in Long Beach, about 8 miles from the prison that he had escaped from. Fortunately for them, he never got out of Long Beach and was rearrested only a week later. But at this time, Madonna still had multiple stalkers. Rob Lindhard was a firefighter who similarly spent time outside Madonna's residences and thought he had a very strong connection with her. He would hold up signs saying, I need you, and begging her to give him an answer. She again was very freaked out and wanted it to be taken care of, so he was arrested and convicted and given 3 years probation. He ended up suing the police for police brutality and got a substantial payout because of it.
Really?
Yep.
What, did they like beat him up on the way in?
I guess. It was enough for him to get money out of the police brutality claims. So, I mean, maybe he must have had something happen. Luckily, things never got as dangerous as it did with Hoskins. However, she is extremely wary of that kind of thing because she's seen how terrifying it can be when it goes too far. In 2010, Polish national 30-year-old Gregor Matlock broke into Madonna's UK homes and bizarrely wore her then-husband's Guy Ritchie's clothes. Matlock broke into her country estate in 2010 and then into her London townhome in March of 2011. Upon breaking into her house a second time, Matlock was discovered by film director Nathan Risman, who was renting the adjoining home. Matlock had used a rope to climb onto the balcony of the building next to her townhome and then broke into her bedroom and rifled through her clothing before stealing a can of Red Bull from the kitchen, where he was seen by Nathan Risman, and he told the police that Madonna had told him he could stay. He was in possession of a map with an M scrawled over her home, nail scissors, and a safety knife. In October of 2011, a British judge ordered him to be detained indefinitely in a psychiatric hospital, as psychiatrists noted he posed a serious risk of harm to the singer. And thankfully, she never experienced anything nearly as terrifying as Robert Dewey Hoskins, and his presence in her life was over. But that's kind of where the story comes to an end. She's still Madonna, and I'm sure she probably still has stalkers out there. Hope not, for her sake.
Yeah, is this dude still in psychiatric?
Yeah.
On a psychiatric, you know what I mean. Is this dude still away?
Yes. Yeah. So the state of California has a conservatorship over him, and basically he is not going to get out.
Oh, okay. So that's what that means. Well, he's, shall we say, earned it. Yeah. I was thinking, like, what do they do when somebody is just so far beyond help and just needs to be put away for their safety as well as others?
I guess
this is what they do.
Yeah,
they put you under the, like, the state is your dad now.
Right. Yeah, they get a conservatorship and they say, hey, you're no longer a free person. You are now under the care of doctors until we think you're okay to leave. And the answer is you're not okay to leave.
And you've kind of proven beyond a reasonable doubt that you would be a problem.
Over and over again.
Immediately upon getting out.
Yeah. I looked up, is he still locked up and, like, is he still alive and whatever? And there's no report on him now. So as far as I know, he's never been released. He's never escaped again. He's either still locked up or he's dead. I don't know. But,
well,
he's no longer a problem for Madonna. And that's good because he was a threat. But yeah, it must be
100%
very tough to be that level of famous and have that many dangerous people coming after you.
Yeah. And at a certain point, it's just like this ever looming thing over you.
You have to have constant security. You can never go anywhere without a bodyguard.
Yeah. That sucks. I can't also like the anxiety tied to it. Like, I'm sure she maybe, I mean, I don't know how you ever really get over it, but maybe she got used to it. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Right.
Like, this is just a thing that level of celebrity deals with, you know.
Yeah.
There are pros and cons to being that level of famous.
Pros and like, cons.
Yes, they are pros. Disgustingly wealthy and just like so they can have anything they want. But on the flip side, they have people trying to break into their home and slit their throat. So
yeah.
It's a give and a take, I suppose
it's
you could say.
It's a give and a take.
It's a give and a take. But that is the story of Madonna's stalker. Any closing thoughts before we finish off?
Yeah, I don't know. The whole time, I don't know, like I have this like duality that I'm struggling with because, you know, he was so obviously a threat that needed to be taken care of, but also at the same time, he is actually insane and was hit by a car and was horribly abused as a child.
You know,
it's just like an end-to-end, incredibly dark, bleak existence. And he was also a violent threat to several people.
Yeah, I feel like I feel similarly about his background as I do many really messed up serial killers who also had like a very bleak, abusive beginning. Where it's like, I feel bad for the child who was abused, and no child should ever be in a situation like that. No, like that's never okay, obviously. And it's very sad. However, he turned into an adult who was extremely violent, abused his own kids and his wife. So it's like, I don't feel bad for him after a certain point. I feel like he's a terrible person. And like, yes, he is mentally unwell. So like he should have had help, but he's also a bad, bad person.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess like I just don't. I'm not a psychologist, right? I don't understand where the boundary of like bad person begins.
Yeah,
and mental illness ends. Like,
sure.
How much is his like quote unquote faults or is within his control?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it's different for everyone, I imagine.
Totally.
But in court, he got off on plea insanity.
Yeah,
which just like I don't know. To me. Doesn't that mean like you're not in control of your own actions? Like that's the argument that's made is like you're not in control of your own actions. So like I'm pleading that I was insane during the crime. So, you know, can that be applied to other parts of his life? You know,
probably. I think he ended up in the best place for him. You know, he needed to be in constant care.
True.
Because he's a danger to himself and to others. So yeah, it's definitely not a black and white scenario, and it is like it's different for every person, and it's a very interesting question. But at the end of the day, he's where he should be, you know.
100%. Yeah, I guess like both of those thoughts are existing. So
no, it's tough out here to be an empath. Is kind of where you're at. I feel like.
Well, I don't know. There wasn't much. I mean, I guess like his childhood, obviously empathetic, but you know, after that, not so much.
Sure. No. Of course. But no, it is an interesting thought. I do get what you mean.
Yeah, I could chase my tail on this one for a while. So,
okay.
What's your good thing?
My good thing is that we are in New York right now visiting family and friends for the 4th of July. We're recording a little bit early right now, so this is coming out later than the 4th of July, but we're in New York for the 4th and we're going to see my friends and my family and it's great. And I'm happy to be home and see my dogs and yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Summer in New York, you can't beat it.
Amen. You can't beat a summer with the dogs.
Summer with the dogs. I got coffee this morning. I walked the dogs, you know, hanging out with my family.
Got a little bagel sandwich.
Yeah. SPK. Saw my father, whatever.
If you know, you know.
SPK, salt, pepper, ketchup. Anyway, what's your good thing?
My good thing is that we are going to play kickball. I like kickball.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that simple.
It is.
So when you have enough people to play like a respectable game of kickball, it's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. And it's very fun. We forget about how fun kickball is.
We do forget. I know. I say I wish I could find a league. I'm sure I could find a league. I just don't have the time or energy.
We've never looked for a kickball league around us, but no, they're out there. They're definitely out there. And it is very fun. This one annual kickball game that we always participate in is highly anticipated event in our house. So
yes, it is.
We're happy to be playing kickball and to be outside and to have fun.
Amen. And to win. I don't think we won the last 2 years.
I don't even think I was on your team, was I?
Which is unfortunate.
Oh, yes. Was I? I don't even know.
I don't remember last year.
Oh, no. You were... No. My team won. Your team lost. So get fucked.
Right. Yeah. But then the year before that, we were on the same team and we still lost.
And we lost.
So...
Who's keeping track?
Me.
Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to get access to all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nowtodaypodcast. If you or anyone who knows a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you, send it to nowtodaypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like even more free content, head over to YouTube and check out Steph Today. I post videos about stories like this. I post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the TNN Podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.